All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. It is it's a great day in the markets. You know, we're starting to see some green pop up after months and months and months of red. So there's a lot of exciting things happening in the crypto world, in the DeFi world, and certainly in the world of NFTs. So today I've brought on an NFT expert. In fact, the CEO of NFT Tech, Adam Dakota. Adam, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're really excited to learn about NFTs and why they're such a powerful revolution. But before we get into that, let's dive in a little bit into your background and how you kind of became the CEO of NFT Tech, which I believe is one of the only publicly traded companies that are like, you know, fully on board with NFTs.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. I'm far from a day trader in terms of crypto, but I've been within the market for over a decade, but always been inspired by the technology behind it. I think blockchain and what it does and what it can do, sort of the point of level, the anchor of most things in general about where tech in general will be in the future. So, you know, I think, you know, from my standpoint, my background's in intellectual property rights. I looked after a number of different properties at Warner Brothers in their consumer products division. So learned very early on about how consumers and fans of brands connect and engage, you know, and what they do further from that in terms of the consumer products that come from it, in terms of licensing. And then, yeah, most recently joined, you know, like I had a studio called Run It Wild that specialized in, you know, learning and developing projects on the blockchain, because everything happens in real time at the moment. We're setting new benchmarks and precedent with any release that you do. And that's been, you know, over the last 2 years alongside consulting at Decentraland and leading all their partnerships, which I know that, Bryce, you and I can talk for days about partnerships.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of the things that are going on over at Decentraland. So as a guy who came from the traditional world of marketing and promotions, you know, what's the overlap between that and NFTs? Why are NFTs kind of a linchpin of culture and society?
It's super intriguing to see what's under the hood of an NFT, I think. You know, working with brands and evergreen brands for, you know, the last decade and a bit, you know, my perspective is that, you know, this connects closer to fans. Ownership is something I think customers and audiences alike will forever sort of delve into in terms of what it actually means. But the fact that, you know, NFTs exist means that they're, you know, tradable. And, you know, that digital ownership is now something that is possible, which it wasn't beforehand.
Yeah. Digital ownership over, you know, over what necessarily is it over potentially rights that, you know, a brand might want to like have like crowdsource or what?
There's many different ways to look at it. I think it's multifaceted, but you know, like if we look at it from a virtual experience or a virtual world of sorts, you know, that might be the digital garments that you have to the avatar that you use to, you know, what and how you interact with different parts of it. From a creator economy standpoint, it means like that these digital assets were never able to be really truly commercialized. They always needed to be on a physical product as such. And here today, they're totally possible. And then, you know, all the rest of it from memberships alongside loyalty schemes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like ownership means that, you know, you can decide, you've got the choice, right? You can buy it or sell it in the future.
Yeah, interesting. And there's a lot more use cases, it sounds like, than just a unique profile picture. You mentioned loyalty rewards programs and, you know, membership tokens. What are some other ways that you've seen the NFTs are being used that people might not really know about yet? And maybe if it's not even ready right now, it's part and parcel of future roadmaps for NFTs.
I think we can even stretch it a little further and understand why a non-fungible token exists and the, you know, the benefits of it in general. And then, so if you look at it like this, the smart contract that's on the blockchain, think of it like a letter of authenticity in many ways, right? So it can verify something. It gives you provenance of ownership and where it's been bought, sold, et cetera, et cetera. When you consider those things, the fact that it's tradable is just one of the benefits to having something digitally. But, you know, the reality of it is that when you look at the way that an NFT can engage on a browser through a digital wallet, automatically becomes something that commerce, that web, you know, e-commerce that we know today is something that, from our sake, it becomes kind of redundant in most perspectives. What we see is a coupon or a first early access pass, yeah, to many of different realms of discounts, etc. They can all be associated to this one NFT. So, you know, like what we would put in our website today would be, you know, your username and password. You would then have a coupon code or a promotion code that you can put in for a discount at when you're going through your shopping cart. The intriguing part about all of it is that if you had an NFT that was associated with that brand or that e-commerce site in general, it gives you that instantly. And, you know, I think we live in a society today where there's a fair bit of trust when it comes to a lot of these initiatives. You know, we can use different browser applications to, you know, like Honey, for instance, to browse all the different coupon codes that are available at any point in time for a particular product that we might be buying. But if you're being rewarded for those things and you've got like a membership of sorts, it's really powerful to think that if at any time you didn't want to have that, your choice could be that you could then try and sell it to someone that might see that the value in it. And you know, like I think the PFP display picture initiative is an okay use case, I think, because at the end of the day, it's the transition we're all exploring and dealing with in real time about the digital age. Right? What it may mean to someone today is that there's an ape that costs X amount of dollars.
More than a house sometimes.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, like at the same time, you know, like that can be your identity, you know, and if it's commercial rights or not commercial rights within the image that you have, I think it's more so what's down to the technology that exists in the smart contract that will be the power. You know, a lot of people throw around the terms utility and benefits. And, you know, like I think we're yet to really explore the true utility of them. Mm. But the options are there, definitely.
What about, you know, I'm hearing lots of rumblings about blockchain-based gaming and, you know, NFTs, you know, being intersected with video games. So I've been hearing a lot about that. I want your take. But then I also heard earlier in the month that Minecraft, which is one of the largest games in the world, put like an explicit ban on any NFTs in their games. So I'm kind of curious about your take on gaming and NFTs.
It surprises me a bit. It surprises me a lot, to be honest, with the perspective of a gamer and, you know, and being one myself, you know, like, unfortunately, I don't have the time. But I did once enjoy, you know, Counter-Strike and, you know, played a lot of Rocket League back when it was free. And I think for me, it's a very natural fit because, you know, what you collect in a game is no different from what an NFT particularly is in its like raw form. And, you know, like I think when you're selling skins or buying skins within a platform, I think there's a level of currency that you should be able to then sell outside of the platform if you wanted to, or, you know, sell it and receive dollars for it. You know, I think part of it is that I think blockchain-based gaming still has, you know, and the theme for everything is time. I think we're at the moment, but it needs to develop. It needs to be fun. It needs to be on par with what everyone is, an everyday gamer is used to. You know, like some of these games are, you know, 8 to 10 years in development. So it would be intriguing to sort of see where it goes, but it's inevitable in many cases, I feel, that, it, you know, that gamers will become one with what NFTs are. So I think there's some like stats around Counter-Strike do, like, I think it's $500 million a year on skin reselling. So, you know, like I think they take about 10% of every secondary sale. So just to put that into perspective, you know, like it's all great and good and it's all happening already where, you know, people are trading outside of the platform, you know, giving passwords and users, but the security of it, you're trusting in someone to be able to do it. And, you know, like it's not direct when, you know, I think most times within blockchain, it just, you've got that digital asset and you can then trade it and you can receive funds for it. That are outside of the platform that can be used. So yeah, I think it's inevitable. It just needs time, I feel. And yeah, I'm surprised with Minecraft, but at the same time, I'm not.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a good lead into my next thought here, which is basically like how far away are we from a true Web3 or like a metaverse environment that people actually desire to use? Because like right now, I mean, I had an Oculus the other, you know, yeah, like last year I had one and I returned it because it was just, I got sick, right? I was like looking around and, you know, you're moving in the game, but your body's not moving. And I felt nauseous in it. You know, everybody's obviously different, but it's not something that's, you know, got a mainstream attraction yet. How far away do you think we are from that? And I don't know if it's like, you know, a optics scientific kind of problem or if it's something else, like maybe just the headsets are not going to be a huge part of the metaverse and Web3 environment. Maybe it's just going to be, you know, browser based. Or what do you think about that?
It's hard to know because technology is moving so quick, right? But at the same time, you're right. Like it requires some hardware to make it engaging and, you know, fun and accessible, right? Yeah. So I think, yeah, a part of all of it is that if we look back at even the dot-com era, you know, where browser adoption was on a very steep upward drive, but at the same time, in reflection to what it has been over the last 20 years, you know, like that first few years was really slow. And I see that similar sort of notion with digital wallets. So I think the adoption of wallets or making them more accessible and secure across the board will help in every case. But it does need some hardware. Is it the solution VR? I'm not totally sure just yet. And is it the VR that you handed back last year? It's hard to say. But, you know, like I think ultimately here, it's like it's crazy to think like what even YouTube's UI looked like 6 or 7 years ago. And, you know, now what it is, and it's a great interface. Whilst, you know, I think most of the internet over the last 5 years has really developed really well. But, you know, prior to that, MS-DOS, et cetera, was just, I'm a big fan of MS-DOS, but like as an aesthetic. MS-DOS, like the, really? The Microsoft Disk operating systems.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so it was way back when it was what you would have probably seen with Microsoft back in the day. Mm-hmm. The aesthetic itself, like anything, has just had to build over time with better mechanics under the hood, per se. Yeah. But it's what did you end up playing on the Oculus, and what Oculus did you have in the end?
Yeah, I had the. It was the new Oculus. It was like the new one, and I liked the mini golf. That one was awesome because you're planted, and you just you move with a button, and you get to decide when you move. The one that I didn't like, I don't remember the name, but it was a racing game. So I started in the car, and I'm standing there, and all right, 3, 2, 1, go, and the car starts ripping, and I'm like controlling it, but I feel my body like still. And the reptilian part of my brain, right? That like base level sort of, I don't know what they call it, but it's, your unconscious movements and all that kind of stuff just made me just sick to my stomach. I immediately took it off. It's like, all right, this is not for me.
But, yeah, I enjoyed, there was a boxing game that was part of it. And, I think it leans in on what the future may look like, but we've still got a lot to go. The internet wouldn't have been something without the smartphone. I think that was the hardware that assisted in connecting more devices and more users. Right. It'll be interesting to sort of explore it, but we're building in real time. Right. So it may take, it's time. It's our theme is time. But I'm excited to see what happens in the next 5 to 10 years. It's a long time.
Tell us a little bit about your plans for NFT tech, whether that's a roadmap or certain partnerships that you guys are pursuing, maybe your go-to-market strategy. Just give us the 101 here on NFT tech.
I'm really inspired by educating and, whilst learning in real time ourselves, educating more people to, enter Web3 and that there is, more wallets and more users exploring what an NFT could do. So our strategy is firmly focused on helping onboard the next billion users in many ways. And that comes from the brands and IP that Run Up Wild as a studio, which has been recently acquired by NFT Tech, is doing. We've got a gaming dev team as well, building out a whole heap of different dashboards. It's super exciting. Nice. On that front, what we're exploring is how brands and IP gamers, how do we help get them there? Because it is inevitable. I know I can have my blinkers on a lot of the time because when you're building in technology, it's hard to see the other side of it sometimes, but you do get reminded that there are a lot of people out there that haven't ever purchased crypto and don't have a digital wallet. And, part of it is, how do they join and how do they start to experience what the future may look like for them? And I think for us, it's primarily that.
And how does that sort of translate into revenue opportunities for NFT tech?
So NFT tech, working with brands and IP or games, there's all different types of revenue that is associated with it. We're looking and actively acquiring, Run Up Wild as an NFT studio or the team from Sherwell, which are building all the gaming dashboards to other opportunities that might lie in the metaverse, for instance. At the end of the day, they've all got their own P&Ls and just like what you would deal with in most cases. I think the most interesting part of NFT tech's model is that if you cast your mind back again to the early 2000s when websites cost a million plus. At the time, those developers were building, and because there was only a limited supply of them, the costs were what they were.
Yeah.
I think this time around, the difference is that with NFTs, there's a secondary trailing commission which goes to a wallet. And as part of our model and what we do, we engage with different brands and, work with them on their Web3 space and are able to also have a portion of that wallet that can come back to NFT tech in general. So Australian Open and our project there, or Elvis Presley Estate, which we're launching shortly, to a few other projects that we're about to announce, all have a secondary trailing commission. So that wallet in perpetuity is pretty exciting to think about for both the brand who can enter the space with a team like this, but then also to have benefits on the other side that they never did alongside us.
Very cool. Are you part of any NFT communities on your own, or are you not really saying like you're part? Like, I know, you know, everybody has, you know, maybe a Gutter Cat profile or a Bored Ape or a Crypto Punk, a Cool Cat. There's all these little communities. And right now they're all like, you know, memberships and profile pictures and stuff. But are there any particular ones that you're a part of?
There's a few. I think anyone should explore this space by being part of a community that they are aligned with or they like. It's a great testing ground to learn, right? So, but one of my fondest is the Metakey project. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Hmm. Maddie and the team, they launched, I think, March last year. And for me, I connected on a level of like it being a glorified loyalty of sorts to benefits that would happen across the metaverse. And fortunately, you know, I had this Medicaid edition too. It was in partnership with Artifact at the time that had only done some releases on Nifty Gateway, which is a marketplace. And holding this Medicaid allowed me to get a whitelist and a discounted price on a Clone X, which is their latest avatar collection. So, you know, and fortunately from that, I was able to get, you know, like I was lucky enough to receive like a Clone X Murakami edition, which then allowed me to get a Murakami art NFT from him. So I think there's some really special parts of like how this funnel is being created between like being part of a community and what does it actually mean in general.
It is. It's such a new, I mean, not to be cliche, but it really is a new paradigm, right? Where you have like just the crossover of ownership of a community with, you know, rewards and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of, you know, it's brand new and it's a great way for brands to engage with their user base or their customer base. I mean, we see everybody from, you know, Gucci and Dolce and Gabbana, you know, these luxury brands that are saying, hey, if you buy one of these fancy purses, you'll get, you know, an NFT, a digital certificate of ownership. There's, you know, from other artists and stuff, I know Ferocious and, you know, all these proof of attendance sort of NFTs saying, you know, I was there on the opening night of X, Y, and Z. And there's all sorts of, you know, really interesting stuff that's going on. It's just, but I feel like we're just still scratching the tip of the iceberg. There's just got to be so much more that's exciting on the way. But, you know, I really, really do think that, you know, NFTs, once they're married with DeFi and being able to, you know, fractionalize NFTs and, you know, have all sorts of different, you know, financial activities done with NFTs, that'll also just blow open the lid of where NFTs can go. Have you seen any interesting combinations of NFTs and DeFi?
I think even more to your point, like DeFi and gaming is just hand in hand. I see, you know, being something too. So, you know, the play and earn initiatives. But yeah, like imagine having an NFT that gives you extra APY on something, you know, just because, you know, like it's all totally possible and it just needs to be meaningful, I think, to, you know, the project or the user. So yeah, there's for me, like, as much as I appreciate DeFi, I wouldn't say, like I said before, I'm far from a day trader in general, but I love what it stands for and what the possibilities are for sure on all of this. But, you know, when you connect NFTs to it, it's additional APY. It may be, you know, early access to certain things because of it as well. You know, the whitelists of the world. I think there's just that's scratching the surface, to be honest. I think I was going to mention before, Bryce, like it can be very daunting to try and relate why this needs to exist. And, you know, I think it's a great time for people to explore and learn about it. They shouldn't, you know, I don't think anyone should not be educated on what may be in front of them in many ways. And it took a bit of time for DeFi in general to sort of pick up from those that were crypto natives. But, you know, outside of crypto natives, like DeFi doesn't matter at all to them. Like, but even though they see it in their everyday banking in many cases, right? Like it's not too different. So, you know, I think it's just about everyone exploring the luxury goods that you sort of mentioned before. There's really interesting use cases in general about what the possibilities may be. One of the largest challenges with luxury goods is, you know, fakes and replicas, and that true provenance of an item, and is it authentic or not? But the biggest thing to me, which is the most obvious, is that, you know, luxury goods come with a price tag, and in most cases, especially for, you know, ones that are finite or truly scarce, like let's say Rolex as an example, you know, like you could wait 6 months or a year or years for a particular Rolex that you might be able to buy. You as the customer will pay, you know, let's say $20,000 for a particular timepiece, and you walk out of that store and I'm waiting out the front because I didn't want to wait that 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, whatever it may be. And I offer that person that bought it $25,000. Rolex don't see that transaction. They only see the primary transaction in this. And, you know, like if I was to then hold it for a couple of years and it's done what the watch industry has seen over the last few years, I could sell it for $35,000, $40,000. And again, Rolex or the IP holder would never see that extra sale. But when it comes to NFTs, it's totally possible. You know, like the trailing commission is a really powerful initiative and I think will continue to be explored. And, you know, like in that secondary trailing commission complements, you know, the provenance and the authenticity that it also provides. So yeah, luxury items, I'm not surprised to see them. I also see, you know, that there's great opportunities within the metaverse and virtual environments to expand outside of physical garments in general.
I've also seen, you know, people say, like, if you're an artist, like instead of just, you know, you sell your art once and then that's it, with NFTs, you could sell your art and every time it's kind of resold, you could have embedded in the smart contract, oh, I get 5% royalties coming to this wallet address. And, you know, if you think about that, kind of like just, you know, building off what you were saying with the trailing commission, it's just the possibilities are endless.
Totally. You know, like there are things that, you know, still need to be worked through. You know, it's not perfect. Those trailing commissions are realistically, you know, on different marketplaces. So, you know, like if OpenSea, you know, what you set there and it's sold on OpenSea, you receive it, you know, like on Nifty Gateway or other marketplaces like Rarible, it's the same thing. It's a sale contract that's sort of associated with the smart contract. I think, yeah, it's empowering to a creator economy in general. It's really empowering to the challenges that we see day to day. In, you know, my brother's really into classic cars, right? Who would have thought that some of the vehicles from the 60s would be worth what they are today, or 70s or 80s? And some of those motor brands are out of, you know, they've gone bankrupt or they've sold or they no longer exist for whatever reason. And, you know, maybe this secondary trailing commission could have helped that continue, you know, or their business continue in the future. So, yeah, I think it's empowering for a creator economy. I think it's really empowering for brands and IP, and I think it's empowering for the customer at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, Adam, before we let you go, there's a couple closing questions we like to ask everybody that kind of comes on the show. And the first one's pretty simple. It's just, out of all the different, you know, crypto or blockchain or NFT companies that are out there, outside of yours or anyone that you're affiliated with, what's just one that you think is having just the largest impact, the most lasting impact, every company kind of in our space?
Yeah, like I think the most obvious is Yuga Labs that run and you know, Bored Ape Yacht Club, what they're doing and what they've been able to create. You know, building in real time, like I said, is daunting, and you got to take your learnings and what they've been able to do and set precedent and, you know, build community around, and what they're developing, I think is really, you know, something special. It may not be perfect in every case with them, but it can't be when you're doing everything in real time, I think. But for what it's worth, you know, what they're able to develop and how they've been able to connect to a community and what they're trialing and testing in general, from metaverse to real life events. Yeah, okay. It's special.
Yeah, I like Yuga Labs. Those guys, they got a good system over there. I guess my last question is pretty simple one, but you know, a lot of people who are watching Crypto 101 are, you know, pretty brand spanking new to crypto, to NFTs, and they're just starting to dive in. What's like one word of advice or one word of wisdom from a vet in the space?
like it or not, the future is happening in front of us. So I think
so get on board educated, or get out.
Well, keep yourself educated. You can make the decision yourself if you don't feel it's right for you, but you should at least learn about it. And I think part of it is what you guys are doing. And, you know, I think it's, there's a lot more information out there than there was a few years ago. I tell you that much.
That's for sure.
So, you know, keep learning, keep educating yourself and ask questions. I think, you know, there are, the community itself is really welcoming, I think, in many ways, although there are a lot of financially driven humans that are part of it. I think there are a lot of other people that are really willing to share their thoughts and learnings from everything. So, yeah, you don't want to be the, you know, you don't want to be my Uncle Mick that doesn't want to download WhatsApp, right? Like, for the sake of the fact that he just doesn't know how to use it. You don't want to be that. I think we all should continue to push and enjoy the ride of technology.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, love it. Thank you so much, Adam, for coming on the show today, sharing all about NFT tech and really the future of all this stuff. We really appreciate it. If there's a Twitter handle or a website that you'd like to plug, let us know.
Yeah, well, there's, I'm only new to NFT tech, so I'm still getting up to date with all the handles. The coolest thing is that, you know, with NFT tech being now publicly listed and one of the, you know, very few to only, you can look up the ticker. It's NFT and it's on the NEO Stock Exchange in Canada and Germany as well. So,
wow,
have a look at that. And also, you know, I'm aggressively trying to find the Twitter handle.
I'll find it as well.
It's here. It's at NFT Tech. So two T's.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, that's a lot easier. It might have been an underscore, but all good. Yeah, it's great, Bryce. I'm really happy that we've been able to connect and, you know, hopefully we see each other soon.
Absolutely. Love it. Thank you so much, Adam. All my listeners at home, thank you for joining us today. Come on back later this week. You know, we'll have some more great guests for you.